Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bofa Metzia Daf Lamed Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 8 lines from the bottom of Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. Before we continue with the Gemara text, let us glance at the side in the margin where we have one of the special features of the Shas Ozer, the Gemara that you see possibly on your screen or you've printed it out, the Nosei, the topic heading, and we indicate Ad Mem Omed Aleph. The topic says, Ein Moridin Koroiv L'Nichsei Koton. A minor inherited land, and as a minor, as a child, he cannot care for it, he doesn't tend to it. The halacha says we don't allow a relative to take care of it, to be the one in charge of it. The Gemara, Omar Rav Huna, Ein Moiridin Katon L'Nichsei Shavui. If someone has been taken captive, we don't allow a minor to tend the field. We're afraid that he's going to ruin it. He doesn't know how to take care of it. He's merely a child. And it would be better for some adult stranger to take care of it. Velo koroiv l'nichse koton. And likewise, we don't allow a relative to take care of the property of his relative who's a child. The problem that could arise here is that the relative that we're, first of all, the relative that we're speaking about is a relative that's in the line of inheritance. And we're afraid that this relative will at one point claim it's his, and the child, being a mere child, isn't going to know how to raise a protest. And therefore, it would be, as we indicated before, better to have some stranger, some outsider there that couldn't possibly lay claim to it as his inheritance. The relative of the cotton could conceivably be in the line of challenging the cotton in terms of inheritance. Number 3. Velo koroiv machmas koroiv l'nichse koton. We'll see more about this in a moment. The Gemara goes over these points. You see how we've numbered them 1, 2, and 3. The Gemara, in explaining them, presents them also we have them with numbers in our marked Gemaras, but not in the same order. We have 1, the next line 3, and then 3 lines from the bottom, number 2. So now we go over the points. Number 1, Ein Moridin Koton L'nichse Shavui. We do not allow a child to be charged with taking care of the property of a captive, even if the cotton happens to be his relative. Dilma mafsid luhu, he might let it go bad. He might not know how to take care of it, and he'll actually ruin the field. Number 3. Velo koroiv machmas koroiv l'nichse koton. What are we speaking about over here? Be'achi mi'imo. We're talking about, first let's translate this. The person that spoken of here that we don't allow to go into the field of the minor is someone who is related to the relative of the cotton. Now, if that sounds a bit confusing, we have a little diagram to help along with this in the lower part of our margin, based on Rashi's explanation. If you glance at the little chart, you have you'll notice Katan is mentioned at the right extreme of the chart on the second line of it. Katan. That Katan has a brother from a common father, and we call him Ach Me'av. That brother, the brother of the minor, in turn has a brother through a common mother. In other words, the father here happened to have two wives. The party that's called Ach Me'ein, he is the one that we're focusing on right now and saying we don't allow him to take over or to take charge of the property of the Katan. If we take a look in the Rashi, six lines from the end, Rashi says, "V'lo koroiv machmas koroiv lenichse katan, kegoin katan sheyesh lo ach me'av." The minor has a brother from a common father. The oisay ach me'av, and that particular brother, he in turn has a brother yesh lo ach me'ein. Now that particular individual, the ish nochri who eitzel katan, he's not related at all to the minor. I hope you can see that from looking at the chart. The Ach Me'ein has his father, we didn't even diagram him on the chart, but his parents are a separate set of parents from that of the Katan. So they're not related at all. Why then do we not have him tend to the property of the Katan? Ein Moridin Oisoy Ach Me'ein L'nichse Katan. We don't have him take care of the Katan's properties. Machmas kurvas ochiv shelzeh. Because that Ach Me'ein is related to the Katan's brother. That they have, that they, the Katan and that particular brother, have a common father. Shehu Ach Shel Katan. The middle Ach that you see on that on our diagram, he also, in addition to being the Ach of the Ach Me'ein, he's also the Ach, the brother of the Katan. And what's the problem here? The Osi Lachzuke Behu Lutzorach Ochiv. We're afraid that that Ach Me'ein will take care of the property and claim that he's taking care of it for the benefit of his brother. The Yomer Nechosim Halolu Shel Achi Me'ini Heim. It says, the properties are my brother. I have a brother through a common mother. It's his properties that I'm taking care of. Shenaflu lo me'oviv. He got them from his father. V'elu lechelkei bo. And they fell to him as his portion and not belonging at all to the Katan. So we're afraid of that happening. Let's go back to the Gemara text. We're picking up the Gemara, three lines from the bottom. V'lo koroiv l'nichse katan. We don't want a relative taking care of the properties of their relative that's a minor. Kevan d'lo mochit asi lachzuki ba. Since the owner, the true owner, is a minor, he's a child. He's not going to issue a protest if someone is using it and claims ownership of it. So we're afraid that the relative is going to claim it to be their something they inherited, and the child isn't going to know to protest. We continue with a point. A long point. Notice we have a long point that continues down the upper lines of Omid Beis. Omar Rava, Shma Minei Mida Rav Huna. From Rav Huna's teaching, we learn Ein Machzikin Benichse Katan. And we continue at the top, Vafilu Higdil. We just continued at the top to read the final two words of this particular phrase. From what Rav Huna teaches, we learn this principle that a person cannot gain a chazoka, a we'll say proof of ownership through usage. The term chazaka in general, outside the realm of kinyanim, has the connotation or the principle of use of land for a period of 3 years with the in the presence of the real owner, the real original owner, and his silence would indicate that he's no longer the owner, provided the user of the land claims that he bought it from that original owner and has been using it for 3 years, and he no longer has a shtar, a title of deed, in his possession. People, it's acceptable behavior on the part of people to lose documents, let's say documents of sale, after 3 years. That's what a chazoka is. In Rashi, three lines from the bottom, Shma mino miravuna, diomar ein meridin karoiv lenichse koton. Rav Huna said that we don't allow a korov, a relative, to cultivate, to care, to tend to the properties of the minor, of his relative, the child. Why did we say that? Shemo yachzik bohem machmas yerusha. We're afraid that that relative might lay claim to it as his own as a result of inheritance. Of all achir, but an outsider, sheino tainas yerusha, some stranger, not related to the child, we allow him to care for the land, moridin, velo chayshinon, and here is the main point, and we don't suspect, we don't worry, shemo yidon, that that stranger will claim the following. So all of this is what we're not worried about. That what would he say? Aviv shokatan machram liva haltim shnei chazaka. The father of this minor sold them to me, and I've been using it. Shnei means years of chazaka, for 3 years. So why shouldn't we worry about that possibility? And we mentioned before that the whole basis of chazaka is use in the face of the previous owner, original owner, with his non-protest, with his remaining silent. So we're not worried about having an outsider tend to the properties of the minor we don't have the fear that he might say, the father of this child, well, he sold it to me, and I've been using it for the last 3 years. Shma mino, we can conclude from this, ein machzik mechse koten, im lo ochal b'fnei o'av sholoshanim. You cannot claim ownership through the silent use of the land, the unprotested use of the land for 3 years, unless those 3 years were in front of the father of this particular katan. Ein shalushanim shochum fnei katan chazaka. Your use of it for 3 years in front of the minor will not afford you the chazaka, that proof of ownership through use. And once again, why not? Because the basis of chazaka, the basis of the use being proof of ownership, is that you used it without protesting, without the protest of the original owner. But if the original owner is incapable of protesting, so you don't have a basis for establishing your chazaka. It's not just the mere use. It's the mere use that goes unprotested by someone who would have been able or would ordinarily protest. That's not the case with the minor. And now the phrase at the top of Amud Beis, the afilu higdil, means even if that cotton, after you started using the land, reached adulthood and you used it for 3 more years while he was an adult, it still would not afford you the chazaka, the sign of ownership. Why not? Because since your beginning use of it was while he was a child, he doesn't know, the child doesn't expect to know who you are, what you're doing there, and he figured you're a legitimate guy. Your initial presence there was while he was a child, so he doesn't know anything about your presence there. He thinks you're a legitimate guy, so that even if you continue there for 3 years after he becomes an adult, it will not afford you a chazaka. We don't expect that that child will know that it's property that belonged to his father. Rashi, on the third line from the top here on Amud Bey, says, if Rav Huna thought otherwise, that continued use after he becomes an adult, when you started as a child, but continued use after the child became an adult for 3 years would have granted a chazakah, how could Rav Huna allow a non-relative to take care of the property of a minor? It might remain in the hands of that particular caretaker after the child becomes an adult, v'yitom, and he'll claim, you sold it to me after you became an adult. So we see from that, and I continued using it for 3 years after you became an adult. You see from this, that from Rav Huna's comfort in allowing a non-relative to care for the properties of a katan, that any initial care of properties of someone who was a minor will not afford that particular caretaker the possibility of a chazakah. If, let us say, in fact, he did buy it legitimately from that particular cotton, from that particular individual, he'll have to produce a signed document that would testify to that effect, an actual title of transfer. But the mere use, which is predicated on the silence of the original owner, would be of no benefit to someone who started using the property or caring for the property, using the property of someone who was a katan at that initial stage. Now we continue with a number of lines of, we'll say, of qualification, qualifying what we've said. Veloya moron, the point that Rav Huna made, that we're not married a kota, a koroiv, lenichse katan, that is said that we don't allow a relative to care for the property of a minor. Elo ba'achid abo. That's only if the relative happens to be a brother from a common father, where that brother could claim it was my inheritance. After they have this, they have a common father, so a claim of the caretaker of the land, if he is a brother from a common father of that katan, could lead to such a claim. Avol ba'achi de'imo les lon ba. If it's a relative, because they have a common mother, we're not afraid of allowing such a relative to take care of the minor's land. V'achi de'abo nami lo amoron ela ba'arasa. Even the restriction of a brother from a common father is only when you're dealing with fields. That's arasa, fields. Avol beboti, if it was an issue of houses, less lon bo. That it wouldn't bother us to have a relative from a common father taking care of a minor's house. Rashi points out because the neighbors know everything, and they would be able to testify that this house fell to the minor as his portion. Ubaru sanami lo amoran, and with regard to the restriction of a brother from common father taking care of minor's land, is also not prohibited. Elo de les the loy of itidah. Itidah is a shtar chaluka, when the initial distribution of that estate, of their father's estate, took place. If there was a shtar an itidah, a document reflecting how the inheritance was distributed, then we have nothing to fear. Aval of an itidah kala is law. It produces public knowledge. Kol literally means a voice or a sound, public awareness, so that the brother from the common father wouldn't be able to lay claim to it. So you can see that the prohibition of Ein Moiridin Korov L'Nichsei Katan that Rav Huna said is fairly limited. And now the Gemara rejects everything we said. For Lohi, all of the qualifications are now undone. Lo Shno Achidabo V'lo Shno Achidimo. No distinction between the kind of brother. Namely, even a brother from a common mother will not be allowed to take care of his kid brother from common mother. The Rashi has an explanation as to why that is the case. For those who are interested, you by all means can look into the Rashi, and we have a little chart that goes along with that as well. Lo shna, the Gemara continues, lo shna arasov, lo shna boti. No difference between fields and houses. Even houses, which we thought we could be lenient about, not so. Lo shna oviditida, lo shna lo oviditida. Lo machtinan. And we also make no decision whether a document of estate distribution was prepared or not. We thought that if we have the itidah, we can allow a brother from a common father to take over to care for the land. Not so. So lo machtinan, we don't allow under any of these circumstances the relative to care for his kid relative's property. You notice a new marking. We have a crown shape on the side of the Gemara. We have a nosei mivne, a nosei, a structural a topic heading combined with a structural note. The crown shape that you see, one you see over here and further down on the page too, that if you have developed the Shas Ozer bird's eye view approach to a daf Gemara, you will appreciate that. From here till the next, to the beginning of the next Omid, till Mem Omid Aleph, I dare say all the way till the Mishnah, we have two stories and the halachic analysis of them in front of us. So we basically have two stories in front of us till the Mishnah on Daf Mem Omid Aleph. And our note we've written, Shnei Maisim, two incidents, Shamashutuf Lahem, what's common to them, Krovim Binachosim, relatives in property. As we open the first incident, there will be a double underline that appears, one of our series markings. These are Hatzois Pitaron, suggestions for a solution, Ma Lasis Binachosim. What are we going to do with regard to the property that becomes a problem in the story after you see it presented? So we'll suggest solutions. Following that, the names Abaye and Rava will appear. They appear initially in a diamond. Abaye and Rava, we've noted, Bishlav Rishon Shalamaisa, with regard to the first stage of the story. Then, as the story goes on, there's a new development arises in the story, and at that point, Abaye and Rava will appear again with with their comments following the new information. Well, the first story, what does it involve? So before we read the words of the Gemara, we've included a little chart that you can see in the margin. There's a singular star in parentheses that, if you can see where that is, this is the chart we're referring to right now. The story involves women taken into captivity. Let's first study the chart. The chart has numbers on it as well, and these numbers will appear in our Gemara text so that you'll make cross-reference as we continue in the Gemara itself. But before the text, this chart has on it, if you look at it carefully, There are three generations. That's why on the top line of the chart you see Sabta. Sabta is, in this case, a grandmother. She's the grandmother of the Yanuka. Yanuka is the child of whom? Of the Sabta's second daughter. You can see Bas number two. So we have a Sabta, a grandmother, with one of her three daughters. We call her Bas number one, taken captive. On the chart we call it Shevi. Shevi is captivity. Another piece of information that we know is the Sabta had a second daughter that died, but before her death she had a child we call the Yanuka. As far as the women in captivity, as the Gemara will unfold, you're dealing with a situation where we don't know if they're alive or not. This idea of not knowing whether they're alive or not is something we've dealt with in our previous Gemara Daf Lamed Ches Amid Beis, where we spoke about the permission or prohibition of allowing a relative to take care of the properties of a shavui, of a captive. We saw a machlokes tanoim on that topic between the Chachomim and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. They were dealing with this kind of case where people are in captivity and you don't know whether they're alive or not. So that's as far as the Sabta and Bas number one. We said Bas number two has nothing to do with captivity. She simply died but left a child, a minor. And we have present in front of us Bas number three, a third daughter. The daughter is an adult. The Gemara. Hahi Sabta dahavya lo tlas binsa. There was an older woman that had three daughters. Ishtaboy ihi v'chadabarta. She, the Sabta, and one daughter was taken into captivity. The one that you see in our Gemara text corresponds to the one on the chart. Idoch tarti binsa. As far as the other two daughters, shchivo chado minayo v'shavki yanuka. One of them died leaving a child. In our text you can see we have a number two, and on the chart itself you see a little line through Bas indicating, and we wrote it on our chart, Mesa, she died, but there's a child. The third daughter was alluded to already when we said the Sabta had three daughters. Omar Abaye, Heichi Navid. What should we do with regard to the properties of the Sabta? And Rashi adds very importantly, we don't know whether she is alive or not. So what are we supposed to do with her properties? And we indicated before the double underline introduces suggestions. But these suggestions will be rejected. Suggestion. Lukminu l'nichsi biyada da'achta. Let's put daughter number three in charge. The Gemara says we can't do that. Why? Dilma Shchiva Sabta, we're afraid that maybe the Sabta died. The Ain, now if the Sabta died, here the Gemara itself is very terse. So we have to go back to the chart for a moment. If the Sabta died, who inherits her properties? Well, she doesn't have sons. So you have daughters. The daughters would inherit the properties. Now, daughter number two is dead. She can't inherit. So who takes her over? Her child. You'll have a kid, a minor, having possession of a part of the properties, being the real owner of a part of the properties. So if the Sabta is dead, a child is part owner of the properties. Can Bas number three take charge of the Sabta's properties? No. Why not? Because of the rule. Ein moridin koroiv l'nichsi katan. On our chart, in our Gemara text, the Korov is boss number three. We don't allow her to take care of the properties because of the portion that belongs to the Katan, who is the son of number two. And that rule is something we just learned under Rav Huna, the bottom of Amud Aleph. Rav Huna had a series of rules, and we said in rule number two, Lo Korov Lenichse Katan. Nukminu, new suggestion. Nukminu Lenichse Biyada Dianuka. Let's put the properties in the charge of the child. No. Dilma Lo Shiva Safta. Maybe the Safta is alive. And regarding that scenario, we say Ein Moridin Katan Lenichse Shavui. That was Rav Huna's rule number one. We can't allow a katan, a child, to care for the properties of a captive. Omar Abaye. So now Abaye says what we should do. Hilkoch. Palga Yavina Lo La'achta. Half the properties we give to daughter number three. Rashi explains. We can do that because mimonafshach. Either way you look at things, daughter number three can take care of half the properties. If the two captive women died, so she, daughter number three, inherits half the properties. How many heirs are there? There would be boss number three and the child. So half the properties she's entitled to. And if they are alive, we allow a relative to take care of the properties of a captive relative based on Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, who we saw on Daf Lamed Ches Amid Beis. Abaye continues, V'idoch Palga, the other half of the properties, Mukmina La Petroipa Lianuka. We set up an executor for the child. We don't allow the child to take care of the properties because maybe the Safta is still alive, and we have the rule that a minor does not take care of the properties of a Shavui. But in Apotropis, we set up. We saw, by the way, at the end of our previous year, at the lower part of Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, the idea of setting up an Apotropis where the Gemara said Apotroposim will not volunteer or function for adults, but they will for minors. Rava disagrees with Abaye. Rava Omar, Migu de Mukmina and Apotropa Lepalga, since we are setting up an executor, we're employing an executor for half of the properties, Mukmina Le Apotropa Leidoch Palga. We say, once he got started, he does it for everything. He's employed for half the properties, he's therefore employed to take care of the rest of them as well. So Rava disagrees with Abaye's idea of giving half of the properties to the charge of Bas number three. The story goes on. L'soif shamu d'shiva safta. In the end, they heard that the safta died. They did not hear, though, any information regarding the daughter that went into captivity with the safta. She may still be alive. What are we to do now? Before we go on in the Gemara, just let's think about this. If on the side that the daughter number one is still alive and the Safta we know is now dead, how many heirs are there? There are in effect three heirs. Bas number one, if she's alive, the Anuka, and Bas number three. Upon hearing the death of the Safta, Omar Abaye, Tilsa Yavinon Lo La'achta. A third we can give to Bas number three. Vitilsa Yavinon Le Lianuka. And a third goes to the child, because he takes over the position of Bas number two, who would have been entitled to a third of the properties. Idoch Tilsa, the final third. Now that final third might be owned by by boss number one, who may still be alive. What do we do with that? With that third of the field, Yahavinon Danka. Danka means a sixth. A sixth means a half of that third. Of course, a sixth, two sixths, or a third. So, looking at the final third of the Safta's property, half of that final third, which we call a sixth, we give La'achta. We give to the to Bas number three, the sister. She can take charge of it at Mimonafshach. Either if Bas number one is dead, so she inherits half of Bas number one's properties. That's sixth. If she's alive, so we hold by Reb Shimon Gamliel that says we allow a Korov to take care of the properties of a Shavui. So there's no problem in giving half of Bas number one's, that we'll call that the sixth, to Bas number three to care for. The Idoch Danka, the other sixth, the other half of that Bas number one's property, Mukminan le apetroipa lianuka. We don't give it to the katan. We set up an executor to take care, because now I should point out, we don't give it to the, we don't give that second sixth to the to boss number three, because it might in fact be under the ownership of the katan if boss number one died. And then you have the rule that says we're not machnis a korov to Nichse Koton. And we're certainly not going to give it to the kid to take care of, because we don't allow a Koton to take care of Nichse Shavui. That was Rav Huna's first ruling. So we have an executor take care of that second half, we call that sixth of the property. When we say sixth, I hope it's clear. It's a reference to the one half of that which boss number one might be the owner of as a result of the Safta's death. Rava disagrees. Rava Omar, Migu de Moikim Apetrepa le Danka, Mokmina Nami Apetrepa le Idach Danka. Rava seems to be consistent with what he said before, that once you employ an apetropus, an executor, for the one sixth, you employ him for the other sixth as well. And now a new story. On the side, we have a topic heading, a Maisa, because no say is the topic heading. We've written Maisa in Mori Bar Isik. The star of this story is his name is Mori. Sheyoy Mechad, one day, Magialoi Odom, a man comes in, Hatayin Shuachiv claims that he's Mori's brother. And as a brother, he wants half of Mori's properties. Just let us assume for the story's sake that everything that Mori has is something that he inherited from Isaac, from his father. Until this fellow comes in, Mori thought he was an only child and therefore was entitled to all of Isaac's properties. With the appearance of this guy coming in, claiming half of the properties, Mori's going to have to part with half of his holdings. Mori Bar Isik also lay achomi be chizoi. A brother came to Mori from be chizoi. Omar le pologli. He says to Mori, I want half of your properties. As we said before, everything that Mori was holding on to was stuff that he inherited from Isaac. This guy comes in claiming, my father was also Isaac, and I'm entitled to half of the properties. Rashi gives a little more depth to the story. Toward the lower part of the narrow lines, Rashi says, also le'acha mi'beichosoy, a brother came from Beichosoy, sholach oviv, Mori's father at some point went to Beichosoy, v'nosa sham isha, and married a second wife over there. Fiolda lo yazed, and she bore this individual as a child to him, to Isaac. V'chazar mori v'kan v'yorad l'nichse aviv u'boze achrov l'zman merubah v'tova chelko. So as we said, Mori came back here thinking that he was an only son, took over the estate of his father, and then at some later time this other guy comes along claiming that I'm a brother. I want half. Amale, Mori says, Lo yodanoloch, I don't know who you are. Osele kamei de Rav Chisda. So the case came to Rav Chisda. Amale, Rav Chisda said, Shapi ko amaloch. Rav Chisda says to this guy coming from Beit Hazoi, says, you know, what Mori is saying is a reasonable thing for him to say, that he doesn't know who you are. Shnemar vayake Yosef is echo v'heim lo ikiru. In the story in Bracious, where Yosef was sold as a youth by his brothers to Egypt, years later the meeting takes place between Yosef and his brothers, and they did not recognize him, but he recognized them. Melameh, this shows us Shiyotza B'loi Chasim HaZakan, that he, Yosef, departed from their presence when they sold him without a beard. He was a youth and didn't have facial hairs yet. Ubo B'Chasim HaZakan, and when he came to meet with his brothers many years later, he had a full beard. So naturally, they didn't recognize him, but Yosef recognized them. They were already adults when they sold him. Just a minor detail in the story that we saw in Rashi. Mori's father had gone to Beit Hazoi and married another woman that bore this child. Mori may very well have seen the boy there in Beit Hazoi, but when Mori left Beit Hazoi, this child was in fact just a mere child. So many years later, an adult comes forward and says, I'm the little boy that your father had when he was there in Beit Hazoi. You left many years ago, and Rav Chisda says that Mori's claim of I don't know who you are is a legitimate thing for him to say, as we explained with the Yosef story. The Gemara continues. Omar Lay. Rav Chisda says to the younger brother, or Mori's brother, Zil Aisi Sadi de Achvaat. You have to bring witnesses that could testify that you are Mori's brother. Amale, so the younger fellow says, Isli Sadi, I have witnesses that could testify thusly, however, Vidachli Mine, they are afraid. They would be afraid to come forth with testimony like that. The Gavro Alima Hu. Mori is a threatening type person. Can you imagine Mori being a fearsome individual who's now being threatened legally with losing half his properties as a result of the testimony of two witnesses that would say that this younger guy is Mori's brother? Well, Mori's a fearsome individual. Witnesses like that, they're not gonna speak up. They'll just remain silent. Amale, Lidide. So Rav Chisda says to Mori, Zil ant, you go. Aisi sadi delav ochuchu. Bring witnesses that this guy is not your brother. And if you can do that, so then you can remain in charge and holding owner of all of the properties. Amarle, Mori says to Rav Chisda, Mori knew a thing or two. He says, Dino Hachi, is this the way, is this the law? Is what you're saying now the law? We have a well-known principle, Hamoitzi Mechavero Alavaraya. The one who comes to extract from someone else, the burden of proof is upon him. Now this guy's coming to take away from me. He's the Motzi Mechavero. He's coming to extract from me. Burden of proof is upon him. Amarle, Rav Chisda says, you can cite letter of the law, but there is more to the Jewish halachic system than simple cold letter of the law. Hachi dainino loch ulochol alimi dechavroch. This is the way, namely, you have to bring proof to maintain holding, because this is the way we deal with you and all threatening characters like you. You know, you're a guy that practices very questionable methods of daily living, of financial existence, of commercial transaction. You twist people's arms, you threaten people, etc., and so forth. So the letter of the law, that applies when everything is equal, so to speak. But when it comes to churlish characters like yourself, sorry, you cannot take advantage of the letter of the law, and hence you have to bring proof that you, that that guy is not your relative. He's that he's not your brother. Amarle, Samori says, well, what's going to happen then, according to you, Rav Chisda, that claims that I'm a tough guy, that I'm a threatening individual, sof-sof osu sadi velo misadi. Witnesses are going to come, and they won't testify that he is, they're going to testify like me. In other words, witnesses will come, and even if they happen to know that he, that this guy is my brother, they're not going to say that. They're going to testify like me that I have no brother. So, what's the benefit of going through all of this? Amarle, Rav Chisda answers, Tarti lo avdi. Now, literally means two things they would not do. Granted, there's an element of fear over here, and there's an element, and we need testimony. But what you're claiming would happen is not going to happen. Naming, you're claiming that the witnesses that I, Mori, would bring will speak up out of fear on my, Mori, on my behalf. Rav Chisda says they would not do that if it was just a matter of fear. People out of fear will remain silent. But people out of fear are not going to come forth and lie. So that if that's what we mean by two things they wouldn't do. Remain silent, yes, but to not only remain silent, but also to testify falsely, that they wouldn't do even in the face of fear. So that if you can bring witnesses that can say in a proactive fashion that he is not your brother, so then you'll be able to legitimately keep possession of all of the properties. The sofa susadi da'achvahu. In the end, witnesses came forth saying that he, the newcomer, is a brother. Amarle liflogli nami mipardisi ubustini d'shosal. So the newcomer says, you know, I'm entitled to half the properties. I want half of the orchards and tree groves that you planted. And Rashi adds at the very bottom line, the shosal, which you planted, ihu, I want half of them, the shosal ihu, that he, Mori, planted, vishbichon, and with that created improvement, increased value of the land, vitein lichetzin kemo shem mishibachim, I want everything. I want half of everything. not just the raw land, but also the land with all of the with half of the land, with all of the improvements that you made while you were thinking that it was entirely yours. At this point, we have a new marking under the side, under the Mivneh, the structural note. This is termed a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. With the narrow part of this trapezoid facing upwards, psak, the divrei Rav Chisda. We'll see Rav Chisda's ruling and Rav Chisda's comments along the way. And the inverted mark that you'll see at the top of Daf Mem represents the responses of Rav Ami. Now, we just heard the younger brother, after having witnesses coming in for his benefit, now demanding half of Mori's holdings, including half of the properties with all of the improvements, with the improvements that Mori made in that half as well. Omar Le, Shapir Kwamaloch, Rav Chisda says to Mori, says the claim he's making is a legitimate claim, disnan. We have the following source. Hiniach Bonim Gedolim Tanim. A person died leaving children, adults, and minors. And the adult children, the adult heirs that improved the properties, the improvement is down the middle. In other words, everyone gets an equal share. Even the minors that didn't do anything, they get their proper share in the improvements as well. We go to the top of Daf Mem. Rashi believes that the phrase we have in a dashed parentheses is not a proper girsa. He has a bit of a discussion around it. We're going to skip it for right now. Omar Le Abaye. Abaye says to Rav Chisda, regarding Rav Chisda's ruling, Mi Domi, how can you compare the Tanaic source that you, Rav Chisda, quoted to sustain the claim of the brother, the new brother? How can you sustain that claim based on the Tanaic source that you quoted? Hasam gedoylim gabiktanim yadi v'komachli. In that case, the adult, there were heirs, series of sons of the deceased, some adults, some minor. The adult children there that improved all of the properties were aware of their minor brother's presence, and they were moichel. They were forgiving regarding the improvements that they made in the portion that would go to the minors as well. So it's justified in saying, in the source, divide all of the properties, including the improvements, equally, even to the minors. The adults that made the improvement, the adult brothers that made improvements, did so with mechila, with knowledge, and hence forgiving of it to them. Hocha mi yoda delecho. In the case of Mori, he didn't know about the other brother, that when he, Mori, was making the improvements, he was doing so with that other brother in mind. Igalgil milsa umota lekame derabiyami. The matter literally rolled around until it got to the doorstep of Rabami. Omar lehu, Rabami said, Gedoyla mizu amru. Literally greater than this, it was said regarding a korov that descends upon the property of a shavui. Shomin lohem keoris. The relative that took care of his captive relative's properties gets a share in that party's, in that relative's properties, like an oris. Hashto didei lo yahavino lei. If we look in the Rashi across from here, gedola mizu korov hayorei lenifsei shavui, a relative that takes charge of the properties, takes care of the properties of a captive. Shim yivo abaylim, if when the owner comes back, if the owner comes back, yitlu shelohem, the relative that took care gets a portion of that. Omru, we continue in the Rashi, Omru shomin lohem ke'oris, we entitle them to receive a portion like a sharecropper. Hocha bidei lo yahavino lei, b'tmiha, we read with a tone of wonderment. Ze she'osa v'shbichon l'das atzmo, Mori, who made the improvements thinking that he was doing it for himself. Lo yahavino lei ka'oris b'chelik hasheni, would we not give him a portion in the other one's properties like we would give a sharecropper? The point of disagreement, as things appear, between Rav Ami and Rav Chisda. Rav Ami, in response to what Rav Chisda said, that the new brother is entitled to one half, 50% of all of the improvements, Rav Ami is saying, no, that new brother is not entitled to a full 50% of all of the improvements, because Mori is entitled to a portion of that, as we have learned in the past, that a relative that takes care of the properties of a captive is entitled to a share in it as a sharecropper. So Mori was taking care of this brother's share in the properties. So he, Mori, is entitled to a share of the improvements that arose. Ahadrua ha lekame Rav Chisda. Now this is returned to Rav Chisda, this insight of Rabbi Ami. Omar lehu, Rav Chisda says to them, Midomi, how can you compare? Hasam, in the case of a relative that is allowed to descend into the properties of the captive, Birishus Nochis, that was done with the seal of approval of the courts. Hacha, in the case of Mori, Lav Birishus Nochis, he didn't descend into the other half of the properties with court approval. V'yod, and furthermore, Katan, who the brother that showed up now, he had been a minor when Mori was tending to, he originally was a minor, when Mori started taking care of the properties, the Ein Morid and Korov Lenichse Katan, and Mori as a brother would not have been allowed to take care of the minor's properties. And therefore, Mori's involvement with that other, with the second half of the properties, was illegal. Ahadrua lekame Rabbi Ami. This information was then told back to Rabbi Ami. Omar lehu, lo saimua kami dekotenhu. The entire story wasn't told to me that the brother was a minor. Had I known that, then of course this is not parallel to the din of Moridin Korov Lenichse Shavui. So you, at the end of this particular discussion, it would then appear that Rav Ami concedes to Rav Chisda's ruling. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.